So, you want to be a contractor. Ever wonder what it takes to become a contractor? The journey they go on to get where they are now, or the crazy things they see and hear on the job site. Well, you're in the right spot. Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor, the podcast. Join your host, Mike Fisher, as he talks to owners of construction companies from all over about how they got started, how they run their business, and some of the craziest stories they've experienced on their job sites. And now, your host, Mike Fisher.
Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor. This is episode number 16. My name is Mike Fisher. My guest today, Brian Topple, CEO of Topple Consulting. How are you doing, sir?
Good, Mike. How are you doing?
Good, good. I want to thank you first for taking a second to come on here let us know your story. How did you get into this industry and that road to where you got today?
Well, when I was growing up, I was not the greatest student in school, but one class that I did pretty well in was woodshop. And I really
enjoyed... Back when they still had woodshop, right?
Yeah, back when they had woodshop. Wood and metal shop, I actually started doing both, and I really enjoyed them both. And going, you know, to the point where I TA'd the classes and those things, and really thought about, you know, doing something within that particular field, not knowing much about anything, you know, other than the cabinetry things. But my parents' friends, you know, had done a bunch of house remodels, and they hooked me up with a contractor. And my first real tool was a pick and a shovel, and I had to dig ditches and do all those things. And, thought this is kind of interesting. It's kind of cool, but I wanted to learn more. So I actually, I was from the Bay Area. I went to a junior college that had a technology program that taught you how to build a house from the foundation all the way through siding, electrical, plumbing, everything. Went there, got the degree, and I was going to be a general contractor, you know, building custom homes, but that was right in the early 90s of a recession. And there was nobody building anything custom back then. So I just ended up doing carpentry and doing a lot of framing, doing a lot of, we used to call it, they still do it, it's called piecing, where you get paid a certain price to do, you know, frame up this house, you get a price. There was no set hours. You just went and you worked. The faster you got it done, the quicker you got paid. So we worked, we worked a lot of hours. And kind of wanted to do more than just that. I always said I wanted to be the guy in the trailer, not the guy working, although I did enjoy, you know, working a lot. So I went back and got my construction management degree, and then started working from some of the largest contractors in the country, managing multi-million dollar projects. So I did that for years, you know, worked my way from a field engineer all the way up to a senior project manager, and thought I wanted, you know, and it got to a point where I was being a road warrior, going up and down the state. I live in California, so I was going up and down the state doing projects, and it really had an impact on my family life. So I thought I could do better for my family. So I started my Topple Consulting back in 2003. As a providing services to owners as well as contractors doing construction management, CPM scheduling, change order reviews, those things. And I was able to get a lot of institutional clients, you know, universities, cities, and be able to do construction, you know, large programs. Like we had one at University of California, Cal State Sacramento, that's called Destination 2010, which was at the time a $200 million program, working on all those projects, developing from design, pre-construction, all the way to construction management. And been doing that, like I said, since 2003, continue to do it to this day. In the interim, though, I did work with one of my clients was a contractor, and I ended up for a little bit being the operations manager for them for several years, during the kind of tail end of the reset, you know, the big recession. So I've been doing a lot. And in the last 3.5 years as a side gig, I've been working with a company, I'm developing mixed reality solutions for construction. So being on the technology side.
Wow. And are you, is Topple Consulting, is it a one-man show, or are you the end-all be-all, or do you have other consultants that you've kind of brought on to do some of the work with you?
I am a kind of a one-man show, but I do have a pool of people that I go to if needing. So I have, you know, again, in this business, it's really a small world.
Very small world.
I run into people that I've come across years and years and years. Sometimes it's funny. One of the projects I did, I was managing for a university, and it was a classmate of mine was the PM on it. So it's small, but yes, I do pull from other consultants if I need help.
Yeah. And I mean, just to kind of highlight that, I've done 160, 170 of these episodes, and it's shocking to me how many of these people that I've had on know other guests that I've had on. And just, that's, I mean, that's just less than 200 people that in this industry that are all pretty well connected. It's pretty fun for sure.
It is.
I want to go back to, so you came out of school, and again, I've talked to a ton of people. That's what I enjoy about what I do. I mean, just kind of learning all the different personalities and the way that people get into this. But there is, most people that come out of school go right into the office, right? They go into project management or you know, sales or estimating or something along those lines. And you came out of school with all that technical knowledge and started swinging hammers. Was that a passion thing, or was it just an opportunity thing, or?
Well, there was two schools, right? So the first one was a...
Right. When you went to the first school.
But the first school was to go basically swing hammers or go plumbing or do electrical work, you know, doing residential construction. So that I went there for the specific purpose of wanting to become a general contractor and building custom homes. Those opportunities.
So what they taught you there was a lot of the physical stuff. As
they
far
taught
as
you there. So it was neat. Was how the bourbon was is that field. If you, sorry, I didn't mean to step over you.
No, you're good.
The way the program worked was, so if you were wanted your help, a custom home built, you bought the materials and the school donated the labor. So you actually went out to a job site and we built a hole. The concrete class formed and poured the foundation, the framing class framed it, the electrical class wired it, plumbing all the way down the line. The only thing we didn't do, thank God, was drywall. No disrespect to all the wonderful drywallers out there, but that just ain't me. So we didn't hang board, but we set the doors, we set the cabinets. We did all of that.
Does that still exist? Cause I mean, that seems like something that I feel like could be one of those things to start closing that gap between, you know, that big gap that there is between, you know, people leaving high school and maybe not wanting to go on to a 4-year university.
So it does exist, but not to the level that it used to. So they don't go out. I mean, a lot of times it's building like a shed or something. It's not the level of detail that it was when I went through. Again, we're over 30 years ago at this point. I mean, that's, you know, you can see, for those who are at home, I've got a lot of gray hair on my face. So it helps. But
I mean, that seems like an opportunity that's being missed for sure.
Absolutely. That's kind of one of the reasons why I got into the mixed reality solutions was my seeing how the skilled labor force continues to dwindle. And not only that we're losing our master craftsmen, the ones that I worked with. I mean, I've been blessed in my career to work with some of the best superintendents and managers and tradespeople in the industry, you know, for the last, 30 years. And seeing them retire, you know, I was on one job, a really large project where we had four people retire, two pipe fitters and two electricians who've been doing it for 35 years. And these guys knew what they were doing and they were good at it. And now they're gone. So doing that with the mixed reality solutions, you know, getting that expert knowledge capture and being able to put it into training modules that we can bring to the kids and promote in high schools to show them, look, the trades you can do, you can get, you know, it's not something you end up in, it's something you can go into and you can make a very good living at it. And you can make six, you know, six and six is not unheard of, if not earlier,
yeah,
six figures in 6 years.
And I love that.
And I always tell people, look, name me a profession you can work anywhere in the world. If you want to go somewhere in the world and work, there's always construction going on. And one of the things, one of the things that was on my construction bucket list, but I didn't do because, again, my company was starting to really take off, was I wanted to go build an Olympic venue. And so I was looking around to see what Olympics were, and I was just going to go, you know, call them up and call the company, hey, I'm available. Because every job I've ever gotten, they weren't looking to hire people. You know, it was, I wanted to work for, I've always picked the companies I wanted to work for, and I just went and worked for them. It was never a, oh, hey, are you looking, you know, looking, look, answering an ad or anything like that.
Right, right. It was... No, I mean, it's creating your own opportunity, right?
Exactly.
I mean, it's knowing what you want and creating it rather than sitting back and waiting for things to come to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you touched on it a little bit when you said skilled labor, right? And that's, I think, where the gap is, because there's a lot of guys out there, a lot of people that own construction companies and contracting companies and you know, trade contractors, and they'll hire labor, but they have to take that time and make that investment into training that person, right? Because there's just not anybody out there that knows how to do a lot of those things. So I think, you know, something like where you went through, if that was readily available and that was widely promoted and people were going into that, I think it, like I said, kind of helps close that gap.
It does. The problem is the stigmatism on the trades. You know, they picture the plumber, you know, underneath the sink with, you know, with the pants down. They think, well, what they don't know is that plumber can, you know, can drive away in a $100,000 Corvette, you know, you know, people make fun, but
without $60,000 in debt after 4 years.
Exactly.
Or
and
more.
By the way, you know, you make fun of these people, but when you're sitting there needing it, you know, when your plumbing's backed up, you know, you want them as soon as possible, right? You don't, you know, that's what people don't understand. And then you take that in, especially in the commercial sector where it's, you know, I wrote an article on this. It's not about just getting more guys. It's about fully training somebody to do the trade. Okay.
Yeah.
And I've seen this on projects, you know, where we told the electrician, hey, you need to get more guys. And so they literally, you know, it was a job, you know, where it was a hotel project. So they needed to wire up all the receptacles. So they went and they grabbed the guy that was delivering on the job like a week ago. They grabbed him because they were paying him a lot more. Said, okay, here, they taught him how to wire up a receptacle. They said, here, do this.
And now
he
can do
it
100 more times. Yeah.
And so, they're calling that person a electrician. Well, if I asked them, like, hey, we have that problem. Can you trace that back to the panel? What are you talking about? You know, what does that mean? size wire are you pulling? What size wire are you using for that? So what, you know, what's conduit? I mean, but that person is being paid the same amount of money as somebody who knows what they're doing. And my thing is, look, if we train up somebody that can do all of it, we will get more productivity out of one person than having three that only need to just do, like, this one person can do this, this one person can do that. Let's get them trained up correctly. And that's something I'm working on. And what's neat is, so they come in, we're doing this thing for prisoners. We're developing a virtual reality electrical apprenticeship training for prisoners. So when they get out, they actually have a skill, and it's walking them through how to do different basic electrical tasks. And so you apply that to any of the training modules with, you know, with the trade schools and the unions, and we can help solve this problem. But the idea is marketing, right? Going out and telling kids, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to go the college route. You really don't. And you can, again, the career, by the way, if you go in and only do 20 years, like you go into a union and you do 20 years and you go in and you're 18 and you're, you know,
you're retired before 40,
40
and
you can go do something.
Great
else.
Pension.
Yep. You can go do something else. I mean, it's just the narrative needs to be changed, and it's
well,
hard.
I think something like the mixed reality, I think that's making it sexy, right? That's making it, you're appealing to that younger crowd by doing stuff like that rather than just, hey, come sit in a class or come swing hammers for 8 hours in the sun and learn how to do this, right? Like you're making it more accessible for sure.
Yeah, just using tools they're already familiar with, right? I mean, they're getting, you know, they're they they all have phones, they all have iPads, they, you know, and the virtual reality goggles are coming out. And again, we have virtual and augmented reality things going on. So it's, you know, it's huge. And to be able to just take that technology that what they're using and say, hey, now you can actually do a trade. And again, what I like it is every project's different. Okay. One day you're on this spot. One day you're somewhere else.
Yeah.
You get a variety. That's one thing I enjoy. And I still enjoy to this day is that I drive out to different projects that is not one project's the same. And that's what it just has a variety.
So go back to when you decided to, kind of leave the general contracting world and become a consultant, right? So how did you position yourself in a way that you know, somebody, whether it's the owner or the general contractor, whoever's hiring you, felt that they needed to hire you, right? Because if I put myself in the shoes of an owner, I think, well, that's just all things my general contractor can do. And if I put myself in the shoes of a general contractor, I think, well, that's something I should be doing. Like, why do I need to pay you for it? So how did you position yourself to be able to insert yourselves into those projects?
I was really fortunate in the sense that what I did was I went out to a public entity that outsourced their construction management. And they had a bond measure passed that created a bunch of money for a bunch of projects. And since they outsourced the CM, the management, I said, hey, you know, you outsource it. You looking for people? They said, yes. Can you start tomorrow? And so I was literally able within right after I gave 2 weeks notice, my company was going and I had a client and I had, 3 years worth of work already locked in. And from there I was able, it goes back to this being a very small business, hooking back up with somebody that I've worked with at multiple companies, him having a bunch of work where him needing help. And so we partnered up and did, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in projects. And, you know, Sim and I still work together to this day. We do stuff together. So it's been a relational thing that I've leveraged my relationships and my skill set to be able to go to these places where I used to either I've done work on these campuses or worked with the contractors on other projects and been able to sell my services.
So going back to that first relationship with the municipality or whatever it was, how do you, what's the vetting process like from them to you, right? Like, what does that look like for them to, because at that point you had no history other than, you know, your employment history. How do they vet you to know that you can, you know, manage the things that they need you to manage?
They at that time, unfortunately, I had a friend that worked for them he was an inspector and a CM.
I can vouch for you.
He was actually my mentor. And so he kind of vouched for me and that was him and I still work together to this day. I'm actually seeing a project where he's the inspector. We're finishing it up. It's crazy. He's going to retire. So we started together. I started my career together and I'm going to see him finish his last project, you know, together.
Oh,
so
awesome.
it's kind of a cool thing, but, he was able to, he's the one that talked me up to them. I interviewed with them and told them what I do and they're like, yeah, absolutely. Because again, going from having to make money and schedule on the project to just overseeing a project is night and day. When you're not responsible having to make the money or even have the schedule come in on time, it's a huge stress reliever. And it's really, you're making sure the contractor is having to do their job. So it was a huge switch, but it was an easy switch because once if you can run a job, you can CM a job any day.
Right.
You know, it's much, I would say easier, but it really is.
Well, I love that it's everything we pointed back to, right? All these opportunities that have fallen in place, and it all has to do with relationships, right? And that's where I was hoping you were kind of gonna point to that, and I'm glad you did because that's the point I'm hoping to make here is that a lot of this is based on relationships and you know, being a part of that network and creating opportunities for yourself.
Yeah, all the jobs I have, even the jobs like, I mean, I get the you know, like doing, even because I said I do scheduling consulting, I even do stuff for attorneys. Everything that I do has always been because I've done something for this person, or we've worked together on something, and they know what I can provide for them. It's not an ego thing. There's just now, because of the way the industry, there's just not a lot of people that can, that are all rounded like I am, when I came in to be a project manager, you had to be able to estimate the job, schedule the job, and run the job completely. You had to know it all. Now we don't do that. The office staff, some people are good at, some people will be good at, scheduling, for example. Some people might be good at estimating, but they're not good at the whole thing. And in the end, making money on the project, having what we call construction savvy, just understanding where your project is at all times. I said, so I know what the value I bring to a client, and that's what I sell. I sell my experience. I sell that I can help them, where they need it. And what I do is, for example, when I do a schedule, I'm not a scheduler. I say I'm a builder that does scheduling. So I walk onto a job. When I do an update, I walk the job. I come in, I sit with the team. I say, okay, here's where you're at. Here's where I think you have problems. Here's where you're going to have problems. Here's where you're doing well. And then I update the schedule with them. And I also help them with their owner stuff. If they need stuff with, putting together change orders, those type of things, I help them with that as well. So I give them more than just being a, P6 operator. We're just, hey, tell me where you're at, and then just update and say, okay, there's your schedule. That does nothing for them. It's not letting them to use the schedule as the tool that's designed to be. It's just something that they're meeting their monthly requirement, but they're not using it. I want them to be able to use the tools that they have.
So do you find yourself selling more to, or selling yourself and your services more towards the contractor or the owner in a project?
Well, honestly, for most of the years, it was to the owners. The last 3 years, it's been more towards the contractor.
And is that because they're realizing that those are things that they don't want to have to manage, and it's kind of, everything's kind of siloing off, like you're good at what you do, I'll be good at what I do?
Honestly, what it is I've tailored my business back to doing more on the CPM scheduling and little bit, the pandemic and those things. I was looking to kind of see what my next 20 years were going to be, right? I've got 30 in, I'm still working. I wanted to kind of see how I wanted to do the next. And on-site management, I've still got a couple of, I'm finishing up one project. I still have a couple more, but they're part-time projects. I've got the mixed reality thing that I'm really, really trying to work into more and more and more. And that's really starting to see some light. Fortunately, the company itself is not a startup, so it's really good. And it's, they have a lot of government contracts. And so that's nice. So it's not the construction divisions, again, that's something that I created. I went to them and did a PowerPoint and this is how you need to use it in construction. They never thought about it. They just said, oh, okay. Yeah. And you're the guy to do it. So I literally created a position for me. unfortunately it's a commission based. So, it's not only they all made anything, but it's starting to yield, but
get some traction. Yeah.
So that's hopefully, but so in terms of where I'm marketing, again, I'm going more in towards the contractors, and I just, cause I know what their needs are right now. And I can, again, work from home more and do really, really kind of set my schedule the way I want it. Cause if you're managing a project, you got to be there every day and you have to be on the site every day. And so you're tied up and your time's tied up. And I decided a couple of years ago that I'm going to be in complete control of my time. And I'm trying to figure out how to do that.
That's not a bad goal to have for sure. So it sounds like rather than being hired for a project, then you're more being hired by a contractor and they're using you for management of multiple projects. So, I mean, what's your bandwidth like if you're on your own? I mean, do you have the ability to take on more contractors who have more work?
Again, if it's scheduling, then it's a lot. Again, so the contractor only wants a monthly update. Well, that's okay.
Right.
You know, depending on the size, maybe that's, you know, a couple of days and you're done. And you only do that once a month. So you can add many of those. Some contractors want where I'll do the, do you know what pull planning is?
Yeah.
Okay. So they'll want me to do the weekly pull plan on the larger jobs, the 100 plus million projects. A lot of times they'll bring me in to do the pull planning, the weekly pull planning with the subs, and do a weekly update with the superintendents. And so that, again, that's a little more time.
Yeah.
So you have to account for that. And those are 2-year projects usually. So it's nice because at least with those projects, you can map how you set your time. But a lot of it are quick hits. We're just, hey, I just need this right away. But again, it all depends on what the project is. Like I said, I've got a project I'm CMing now that's going to really start going, but that's 10, 15 hours a week. And so then I know I've got, 30 more hours or 25 more hours that I can spread across, the week.
Yeah.
I'm not doing 50, 60 hours anymore. That's something, again, I've earned the right to not have to do that.
Right. Right. And controlling yourself too. Right. I mean, that's the entrepreneurship part of it. Yeah.
And that's to tell the young people, again, construction is not an 8-hour a day business. I tell the young people, look, to make it in, you're putting in 10, 12 hours a day at minimum. I'm sorry. I mean, that's the job. And when you're young and sorry, that's what you should be doing. I mean, hard to tell young people that now, but that's the way it is in this business. It's just, you get there before all the subs is, and that's when you get most of your work done, and you get it done after the subs leave. The rest of it is just managing the chaos during the 8 hours that the subs are on the site.
Yeah. So from a technology standpoint, do you find what you're doing to be kind of replaced by any of that? I know technology is kind of growing pretty rapidly in the industries as far as, being able to do a lot of the scheduling and takeoffs and all those things by utilizing more and more technology and again, augmented reality and virtual reality and a lot of those things. Do you see any of that replacing what you do or kind of mitigating some of your...
No, what it doesn't say replace, what it does, it just... Some of the things it can enhance it. It's not necessarily a replacement. You might, again, there's no substitute for experience, and period. Because the computer can calculate all the different ways to reroute the schedule, but unless you have actually gone through these things, then you can't take the place for experience. It doesn't matter what the solution is. Now technologies make it to where you're being able to do tasks that are, that were time consuming. Let's say like layout, for example, the solutions that we had developed, if somebody having to pull a tape to mark things off, the solution will tell you where things go. So you're able to, now then instead of having a foreman be able to do it, I can have an apprentice do it, for crying out loud. Now not to say that they'll allow that to happen, but but if that layout guy is busy in other jobs, then it can really save some time. And if it's, then you have it, and it's an automatic QC, because I can put artificial intelligence in these solutions that will tell you if it's right or it's wrong, even if your eye misses it. And so the problem is I've noticed over the years, and I fought it when I was an operations manager, is that, nobody really wants to think. They're scared to make decisions. Because they don't want to get in trouble. Again, we've unfortunately softened ourselves over the years, and people don't handle stress very well. They don't handle criticism at all. And so they don't want to think, they don't want to do anything they want to be safe. And so I said, okay, well, if you're not going to think, then I'm going to do the thinking for you. And so that's when I threw my, raised the white flag and said, okay, I'm going to see if I can develop solutions that will at least get people more confident. Because if I have a worker that is scared to make that call, but if the solution says, hey, this is where you're going to put this. Oh, great. Then when they get to the next time they do it, they don't need the solution. They already know. They've gone through it. They know, understand it. So they're going to be more confident. When you have confidence, hey, I know what I'm doing, you're going to get them to do work better. And it's going to be cleaner. And now you're going to get to, hope, you know, eventually a goal of zero error, right? And zero error, no rework. So you don't have cost of rework, scheduling, you know, schedule problems, and you're getting more productivity. Now we're going to start to be able to hit the problem on schedule overruns and cost overruns. Because we have it every single project. I mean, minimum, I tell my clients, look, whatever you want, add 2 months to it. Because that's really where we're sitting, maybe even three at this point, especially with supply chain issues.
Supply chain.
You could be 4 months. And that's not an exaggeration. I mean, I'm scheduling a project right now. The switch gear has been delayed 4 times. It was supposed to be back in October. It's not even, hopefully it'll show up next week. You know, I mean, that's where we're at right now.
Sitting around waiting, right?
Exactly.
Hoping and waiting. Yeah, it's a wild time. I actually just saw a post from somebody, an electrical contractor, who said he was, same. I think it was, I don't remember what he was waiting on, but he said it was like, 2.5-3 months finally to be able to finish up a project.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wild time for
and,
sure.
And the switch gear, that's where you get your power. So now you can't, you can't turn any equipment on. You can build the elevator off a generator, but then you can't test it. You can't, I mean, you're stuck.
Yeah.
And the owner doesn't want to hear. Everyone says, well, you should have ordered it earlier. Like, I ordered it a year ago. What do you want me to do? It's not even from the supplier. It's literally from the manufacturer. It's not the sub. It's not the supplier. It's the manufacturer. Well, you go talk to the manufacturer.
Yeah. How often are you getting brought in, like in the development phase?
I'm usually brought in right at the beginning, pre-construction.
Probably makes it a little bit easier for you.
Most of my clients bring me in right at the beginning, right when they're in, right after they got the award, right into design. And again, I bring some consulting things into that area as well, pre-construction.
Have you seen any business by way of, hey, this is broke, somebody left, contractor left, whatever, like come in and kind of fix and rehab a project in the middle at any point?
I have not gotten any of those. I have not had any of those I've done them before.
I guess that's a good thing, right? That means that they're not too prevalent out there.
Yeah. It happens. Bonding companies come in. I mean, I don't have a relationship with bonding companies. So if I did, that would be more work that they would have me run for them. If a bonding company takes a job over, which is not a good thing for anybody. But if that happens, I haven't hit that, solicited that work. I thought about it years ago, but I just never pursued it.
So kind of into that realm of soliciting work. I mean, is there anything you're doing from a marketing or branding, or is it necessary at this point, or? Where are you at in that stage?
I don't really market. I mean, again, it's connections. I don't really market myself too much. Honestly, what I do is I look for people that, because I know what's out there in terms of lack of people, I'll go look to see who's needing services. They want to hire somebody for it. And I'll offer my services to them if you can't find anybody, if you need something for this particular project, I can do this for, because then they don't have to worry about paying benefits or, finding the next job for that person. They can just have me, and they can get more bang for the buck, especially because I can do it usually a lot faster than somebody who's just coming into it. So they end up saving money by just using me for the particular task for that, for a project.
Yeah. And I love that. I mean, it's a mindset that's obviously not, it doesn't work in all industries, but going out there and kind of just, rather than, putting yourself out there and waiting for people to come to you, you're literally going and creating jobs for yourself by just putting,
I can always, 'cause I always like, what happens if you don't have work? I look at the list of needs. I could get a job tomorrow. And that's what's, right. again, that's what right. I love about, I tell people, look, there's no hurt for work. You know, if I needed to go actually work for somebody, I could call up somebody tomorrow. I could call up a client for crying out loud and say, hey, we're, you know, you need to, are you looking for somebody? Are you looking for full time? And I guarantee you, after this interview, I could call somebody right now and I could have a job. By letting one of that.
So what's the future look like for you? I know you said you're kind of setting yourself up for the next 20 years. You kind of changed your business model a little bit, but is there plans to grow or bring in, you know, somebody underneath you to kind of teach them your ways and kind of expand that way? Or is it
my goal, honestly, is my initial goal. I want to change the industry with the mixed reality technology.
Yeah, for sure.
It's happening. Contractors are always slow to the party with technology. We just are, because people don't understand outside the industry that margins on contracts are not large. You tell somebody on a $1 billion project, if that contractor made 1%, they did amazing. They go, what are you talking about? No, the margins are not there. So obviously investing in technology, they want to see it all work. They want something that's going to be good and that they can get a value out of it. The problem that I'm having is changing the narrative that, look, if you actually bring these tools in, you'll make money. Because if I have something that's going to increase productivity and reduce cost, then you're going to see a rate of return in the initial, you know, first project easily.
Yeah.
But again, it's changing that narrative. So that's one thing I'm really wanting to do. And again, promoting the training aspect of getting young people involved in getting into the trades and getting into this business. That is what I'd like to see happen. In the meantime, for my business, continuing to develop the scheduling angle of it. I'm also, you know, looking on the legal side, doing more consulting to attorneys on expert witness type things. I'm not looking to, you know, have other people under me. I've been an ops manager. I've had control over companies, and I'm not interested in doing that anymore. Again, I'm on the downhill side. So I'm more about my quality of life at this point. Like I said earlier, is that I've earned the ability to not work 50, 60 hours a week anymore and kind of decide what I want to do. And if it's not there, then I'll, if I have to go work for somebody, I'll go work for somebody, but that's the current plan right now.
Awesome. I love it. Well, I appreciate it, man. Before we let you go, I want to give you an opportunity to kind of let people know where to find you, if that's emails or phone numbers, or obviously the mixed reality stuff too.
Sure. You can, best thing is to email me at bnbtji@gmail.com. That's my email. Or you can go onto my LinkedIn and you can connect me through LinkedIn. I use LinkedIn a lot if you're interested.
Perfect. Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate it, Brian. It's been great. I thank you for the time and for the awesome story, for sure.
Yeah, no problem, Mike. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, let's keep in touch. I look forward to kind of following you and see where everything takes you, especially on that mixed reality stuff. I think that's
the
future, and it'll be fun for sure.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Well, have a good one. Have a great day. Thank you. Stay safe out there.
All right, you too. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you had a good time, be sure to hit that subscribe button to get all the latest episodes. And if you had a really good time, leave a review to let us know what you thought. Until then, go gather some crazy stories on your job sites, and we'll see you next time on So, You Want to Be a Contractor.